Welcome to the On Come Norwich podcast, a plentiful plutocracy of plagiarism as we plunge a plethora of playoff platitudes at your earholes. Johnny P and EDM are both with me for this one. ED, do we need to start by saying fair play to David Wagner?
Hello, yes. Yes. But isn't that just weird that we're just sort of kind of patting like the little pooch on the noggin and saying you did good, buddy. It's not really football, is it? Like, you tried your best. Yes, like it's better than we were. We did, you know, he has pulled us out of a bit of a hole, but I don't know. We need a kind of XL bully that can get the fangs out and go nah! And he's more of a kind of,
well, he's like, injured. Ashley Barnes is injured. he's about as XL bully as we get, isn't he?
But we need a managerial XL bully, I think, rather than someone that just looks like just always a little bit scared in his eyes. Like, he's got these huge dark eyes, which are really cute, but and that would get him picked up at the dog pound. You definitely adopt him first, but like, is he going to perhaps be a safe pair of kind of like, you know, bullish hands for what comes next?
Okay. Managers of dogs. ED is down at the local dog pound. You've decided it's time to adopt her. They're not puppies. You know, these are sort of rescue dogs, two and a half, three, but relatively well trained, you hope. You think in terms of dog terms. Gary Rowett, Daniel Farker, David Wagner, and Eddie Howe. They're the dogs that are left in the kind of rescue home. Who are you taking home? Who are you adopting?
It's a tricky one because they're so generic, aren't they? Like, none of those dogs would guard a trap house successfully, and that's what I'd be looking for managerially.
Not Rowett? You don't think Gary Rowett's got a bit of ankle bite in him?
Ankle bite, yeah, but you want someone that's going to, like, spot a jugular.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
Someone that probably, like, the Daily Mail would start a campaign against.
Well, Gary Rowett, I think Gary Rowett would hate a postman. He would definitely be a postie baddie. What about you? Which of those managers, if they were dogs, do you think you'd take home, punt?
Not Gary Rowett. Gary Rowett seems to hate everyone, but I don't know why. Can I just share with you very quickly, though, because we you just mentioned Ashley Barnes, and it just popped into my head whilst you mentioned Ashley Barnes. My eldest child commented that he is going bald disgracefully, which he is.
She went,
Dad, his hair looks like, you know, when you bite into a cream egg and then you've got all the chocolatey bits just kind of like just there, just kind of, and he was like, just looks like that. And I was like, yeah, it really does. Like, he looks like the top of a cream egg that you've just bitten into. Anyway, if Ashley Barnes is listening to this, I'm sorry, but shave your head, mate. What were the options again?
Gary Rowett, who we've thought you don't seem to be impressed with. He's done a very good job. You know, I think they have like mid-table points per game, like under his stewardship. I didn't realise Ashley Cole was on the coaching staff there. That completely, I was watching it on Saturday and suddenly realised, God, he did not look a lot like Ashley Cole. And then I saw the AC on his breast and realised, oh, he was. Anyway, so it's him, David Wagner, Daniel Farker, and Eddie Howe. Because Eddie Howe, he's like a sort of thick golden retriever, sort of stupid lab sort of character. Sort of basic dog.
Yeah, basic in a lot of ways. You know that about my disdain for Eddie Howe. I think that's why you've thrown it into the mix, to be fair. Daniel Farker's
it wasn't that. It's the fact that I was just thinking who's a bit like dogs, and they're the people I think are like dogs. I think I immediately thought sort of yellowy lab, and immediately Eddie Howe, first name came to mind.
Daniel Farker's hair, if it was blonder, would remind me of like Dougal from the Magic Roundabout, you know, that kind of lovely centre parting and then just kind of flops. Yeah.
One of those Tibetan guard dogs where the kind of underbite comes out like...
Well, yeah, we've got one of them. It's Lazar Apso. Yeah, yeah.
Could you ask your eldest what she thinks about how Daniel Farker is going bald? Because he's obviously got a bald spot right on the top. Sort of towards the back, but he's currently obviously able to grow. He's follically gifted around most of the rest of the follicles. So I'd be interested which confectionery We're off piste early here. Which confectionery is I want? So come back for the kind of the recap pod we do after the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to know what she thinks about that.
I'll make sure that's the sole topic of conversation on the way to Carrow Road on Sunday. Yeah, absolutely. Decent. I mean, I'd just take Farker out of them lot because it's Daniel Farker, isn't it? And you know, we won't cast any dispersions about his private life or anything on this pod, like you know other people might be at the moment.
Cool. Okay. So, Edie, what was all that carry on Saturday then? Why did we not bother at all and seem so satisfied to, you know, do you think it's as cynical as we really fancied sixth place? He thought that from what he's seen in the games where we've been outplayed against Leeds so far this season, he thought, yeah, but the third time will be different because we seem to be playing to lose.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the story so far. There's so many times the kind of little explanation afterwards has been, well, you know, we didn't want to knock our pens out for this one. And so it wouldn't surprise me if that's the case. And I'm kind of secretly in agreement that might be a good strategy. I mean, it's like if we want to develop a long-term campaign, maybe that's the way that we do it rather than just running at everything screaming and then falling over and breaking our ankles.
Well, I'm glad no one broke their ankles. Speaking of injuries, though, Punt, surely Johnny Rowe starts Sunday against Leeds.
Okay, if I look at the body of evidence of Johnny Rowe's performances since he's come back from injury, nah, not for me. I think he would be best served as a bench weapon and to strike fear into Leeds' hearts. But has he really, apart from that Preston game where he came on and there was a really presentable like 25-minute cameo where I wonder whether he was getting through on adrenaline alone, has he come on and affected a game and looked dangerous and, you know, being the Johnny Rowe that he was pre-injury? Absolutely not. Like, you know, and I think if you were looking at it on form, should he be anywhere near the starting 11? No. I'm hoping Fastnacht is fit because then that allows Nunez to obviously play in his more natural position and Sarah to play in the 10, which I think is probably as strong as we can get right now.
Yeah, Sarah out wide was not enjoyable at all. And it was really disappointing. But then, I don't think
that in of itself is an issue, though. It's the fact that Marcelino Nunez had to be kind of shifted into the 10, which then just left us without a degree of control in the middle of the park. That was the main issue for me.
Yes, well, Sørensen, I thought, had a really poor game. And I think he played himself out of the team on Sunday. So with Fastnacht, was it just tiredness from new baby or was he actually injured?
I think there was a knock and I think, you know, they're probably in the business of, you know, last game of the season, we're kind of in the playoffs. They're not going to risk players. It might've been one of those situations whereby if we'd have needed the points, you know, he'd have been in, but yeah, I think they expect him to be fit for Sunday.
Well, I mean, I was having a look at the Leeds news to see whether or not, because they had three relatively important players that were injury doubts coming out of the last game of the season, but unfortunately, it seems like they're all going to be fit. So Daniel James and Patrick Bamford are expected to be available. And also Somerville, you know, they were sort of talking down how bad the outcome was after the game. So not having Somerville, I think, is the biggest impact based on having watched them this season. I mean, he's one who is going to be in the Premier League, you would think, irrelevant of how Leeds' campaign finishes. But, Edie, going back to what we were saying about wanting to finish sixth and play Leeds, whilst they've not lost at Carrow Road in 6 years, they've also failed the last five times they've been in the playoffs. You know, their fans are not keen at all. So maybe of the four teams, obviously we can't play ourselves, of the three teams, maybe they're the ones we wanted?
I think so. But also, doesn't it feel like there's sort of an element of fate woven through this season? And it's kind of part of this epic 10-part HBO drama that's actually Daniel Farker's story. Like, I think our main character era is over and we're now we're the context rather than the protagonist.
That's an interesting take. I mean, I think he's obviously had the Russia experience would have been an interesting episode. I mean, that would have been, that's the sort of thing where maybe that's the episode that people who aren't a huge fan of the series talk about. Oh no, but that was really well done, and that might, that yes, might be a,
it's, yeah, it's the equivalent really, that of that Sopranos episode that happens in the woods,
or that weird one of The Last of Us, which was about two characters that were only in it for that sort of tiny thing, like episode three or whatever it was.
Yeah, but there's your Emmys.
Yeah, well, this is it.
Yeah, and if you've played the game, like, it's brilliant backstory. Anyway,
okay,
that's a different podcast.
Okay, not one that I've listened to. Right, so so you're saying that we're gonna go effectively as we were, but Sorensen for Fastnacht on Sunday, right?
Yeah, that is what I'm saying.
And what is your current feeling around? I'll give you a really simple answer. Irrelevant of how likely you think the outcome is, do you even want to get promoted?
Oh, that's the... Yeah, I was having this discussion the other day with a couple of people. Okay, I would love to be promoted for the looks on my children's faces when we go and win at Wembley, and you have that... Like, everyone remembers what it feels like when we're at Wembley and, you know, the whole squad are parading the pitch and Alex Neil was right in front of us, you know, kind of fist pumping, and then he had the trophy and he's just going bananas, and it was just the end of a remarkable ride. Like, my kids haven't had that yet. I've had that. And I think, you know, look, I could live with the fact that we wouldn't be in the Premier League and it would all be fine, because we all know what the Premier League brings. But football's about moments, right? Football is, that's what you remember. Like, so I will remember way more the you know, the 90 minutes at Wembley and the Jerome and the Redmond and, you know, all the rest of it, than I will the season that ensued and the, you know, the Stephen Naismiths and all the rest of it, you know, the nonsense that we had to put up with. So I think, would I like to be promoted? Yes. But then would I almost like to be promoted and then, you know, go into some different league where we could be way more competitive and, you know, we could just drop the top six out of the Premier League and, you know, make it a level playing field? That would be my ideal answer, because football's broken. You know, so you've, going back to the moment, you have to take the moments when they're presented to you.
So you basically are taking a moment knowing that every moment then comes with an asterisk the following season, because every goal you score, you then can't celebrate it until VAR finishes ruining football.
Yeah, essentially. But I just wonder with VAR, though, whether the tide has started to turn so much that we might just see the back of it in the next 2-3 years. It's just everyone hates it, like, apart from the referees that administer it.
Well, I
and Sky TV.
Yeah, I mean, the you say everyone hates it. The armchair fans of the big teams, which is what the Premier League care about more than anything, what Sky care about more than anything, well, you know, they only hate it when it goes against their team. They all think, they've all got, and it makes me laugh, because they're a ridiculous bunch. It's a ridiculous way to like football, in my opinion, which I've said many times before. But anyway, they all have got, like, VAR versions of all of the other teams' names. So, you know, like, Arsenal fans refer to Liverpool as Liverpool, and, you know, Liverpool fans refer to Arsenal as Varsenal. They all think that they are the most hard done by, and that's their only kind of issue with it. They don't actually have anywhere near as much issue with being in the ground, because they're hardly ever in the ground, the overwhelming majority of those fans. And because that is actually the audience that they care most about, because that drives subscriptions, that I don't think it's ever going to go away. What I'm hoping for is that we might get to a point where they put a time limit on it, or they make tweaks to the game with regards to, you know, they already made a concession in terms of drawing lines, you know, in the build, you know, so we didn't see the lines during the building. You know, the closest we can get to a fix, I think, or the most realistic thing to hope for, is that they give the VAR assistance 30 seconds. And if it's not clear and obvious in that 30 seconds, they're just, the on-field decision stands. And because I was watching some football at the weekend, like that decision that Kai Havertz, the penalty that Arsenal got, where it was, you could easily see it either way, easily. But I think the referee didn't give it. I think the referee waved it away and then they changed it to a pen. I think it was that way around. But the point is, it was minutes went by. Now, I'm sitting on the sofa watching it. Mm-hmm. I'm not in the ground. I've got absolutely no interest in either team. Although I'd rather Arsenal win it, probably, just for a change, but you know, no stake in any of it. So as in win the Premier League, but you know, so what? It annoyed me even as an armchair fan that it was just like, well, look, we're just watching the same replay from the same angle. It's not even like we're going through each angle one at a time. It was several minutes of watching the same angle, getting no closer to any objectivity or any real clarity, because it's just going to be one bloke's call, but that bloke is sitting in, you know, a porter cabin outside or in whatever the name of the place, St. George's Park or wherever they do it. So if all we're doing is moving it from one bloke's opinion, but he gets to watch it 10 times from the one bloke's opinion who was actually on the grass, we haven't gained anything. We only gain something if you set it to a 30-second timer so that if it's absolutely egregious and you're going to be hauled over the coals for this because it's so obviously incorrect, like that time when the ball went past the goal and, you know, they thought it went in, you know, that sort of ridiculous element, or someone's punched someone in the face just off camera or whatever, 100% that should be called out. But you see that on the first replay and you immediately cut it down. And that effectively means that you only got to wait just a few seconds until you celebrate.
But do you? Because do they then have to call the ref and make sure that the on-field ref is still happy with it?
Well, this is the thing. I think the calling the ref over is another thing they can just get rid of. Because
it's an inevitability. As soon as they call, you know, him or her once, over, then
I think I've seen it once where they've gone over and gone, no, I don't agree. I think I was right first time. I think I've seen that once. And so based on that statistical probability, it's then an even bigger call for the ref to make, to say, no, I'm going to overrule VAR and stick with my on-field decision. So as far as I'm concerned, they can just do away with that screen on the side, because everyone knows as soon as they jog over, oh, the decision's going to go, you know, the opposite way to what's just been given. Mm-hmm. So in that scenario, just do it like cricket and just say, look, if the third match official says it's that, then it's that, the end. Rugby's third match official. What's the TV one? It's just TV umpire, isn't it, in cricket?
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. That's my two penneth on it. Edie, do you want to get promoted or not?
No. It's a really quick one. So there's so much going on, like Ipswich having their promotion, like just let them have their moment right now. Let them go and get that sudden shock of cold water that we've experienced all these seasons. I think it's time to take a step back. Let Napa build what he needs to build in relative. The more scrutiny these people get, the harder it's going to be to build something for the future.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably time. This is going to be the season. It's the full field rotation system. This is the year that the field is fallow. Maybe it's time for Delia to just sort of quietly hand over some more reins of power. Maybe it's time for some kind of less personal decisions to be made, and just to build some football on a kind of more professional level.
Can I add to that point, Edie? Something I was thinking about with regards to Napa, and that is, it's not necessarily professional or long. You say about long term, it will force short termism into Napa's plans. So this is the thing that I think undid Weber. It was the fact that he and Farke got to the Premier League too quickly, and it meant that all of a sudden they were forced into maybe not having, they probably didn't have the depth of scouting and the depth of plan that they had maybe a year or two's hence. They maybe wanted a couple of their players to be a couple of years older by the time they got there in terms of the youth team. They maybe, you know, like they're expecting Max to be a bit more developed, they're expecting Todd to be a bit more developed, etc. And therefore maybe they had to rush it a bit, and when we know that a team of the size of Norwich, we have to hit on 90% of our transfers, they need to be basically first teamers, or we're not gonna stay up. I very much hope that Ipswich lose every single week. It will be so, like we've got a question, haven't we, from the listener questions punt. Might as well hit that now as it's relevant, with regards to, you know, watching them, what was it, qualify for European conference or something.
Yeah, this is from our friend Matthew McGregor. Can the panel predict how sick they'll feel when Ipswich qualify for the Europa conference next season? And I kind of think they're going to do all right. I think they're going to stay up, and I'm happy to be proven massively wrong on that. Oh, you know, I'd be ecstatic to see them fail and have a record low points haul and all the rest of it. But I think,
what are you basing that on, though? I mean, if you look at
momentum,
look at the momentum Burnley had, look at the momentum that's like, if you look at the three that are at the bottom, if it wasn't for the points deductions, the three teams that went up would have already
been relegated. Oh, they'd be completely cut adrift. Right? And it's nothing more than like almost self-protectionism that, you know, like,
yeah, I get that.
It's, maybe it's going to happen. But I, actually, there is a part of me, and there was a part of me that thought Luton might do a bit better and they would probably do the best out of the three promoted teams. I just think Kieran McKenna is an exceptional coach. Like, there's no getting away from that, because the players.
No, I don't think so. I've seen his team totally not show up in the biggest game of their season, of their fans' lives.
I think that's,
and he,
I think that's psychology.
Them. He absolutely, and I don't know if, them.
I don't know,
I think
if
that's an important
them.
Part of being a coach.
I don't know if he failed them or whether those players just weren't potentially prepared for that occasion.
Whose job is it
in the way that they
should
be? Well, that's a good point.
Thank you.
But what I would say is that everything that I've seen this season, when I've seen them in any games apart from the derby, or most games apart from the derby, they've looked like an exceptionally coached football team. And we can't get away from that. Coupled with like Ipswich's American pension fund or wherever their money's coming from, I think are going to invest, because actually to chuck a bit of money at it and to get an, you know, a Premier League club that's been there for a couple of seasons is much more of a decent exit strategy in terms of, you know, their investment than it is if they come straight back down to the Championship. So I think, and I think this would happen under the Attanasios as well. I think the next time Norwich get promoted, we will throw a bit more money at it because it's just wiser from a longer term investment style. I think Ipswich are going to follow suit. I think, but what I think they will do well, like they did this summer, is they will probably put not necessarily bigger money, but smart money into smart players. And I think McKenna is absolutely, you know, kind of home and hosed in terms of being able to develop those players. You know, he's proven it already. And that's why I think they might do all right. Actually, the style of football that they play and, you know, the quality of players that they have should not be Premier League ready. You know, Daniel Farker found that out in the most spectacular of failures in that first season. But I don't know, there's just a niggling feeling that the momentum factor and the almost, look, it's really easy to draw parallels with Paul Lambert and what he did in terms of successive promotions. But we were fucking brilliant when we went up under him.
Yeah,
do you know what they don't have, though?
Go on.
They don't have a seasoned supporter base. Like, Norwich has a supporter base that has decades of experience.
That's a good point.
And pragmatism.
Yeah.
And they know to be able to handle. Now, if you look at, I don't know what the proportion of new fans is. Like, some have suggested it's like 15,000 new fans in Ipswich. By and large, from what I've seen, waiting on the train station at Ipswich to change trains, very young, very, should we say, not very seasoned or experienced young men.
Or intelligent.
Maybe.
No,
I did see some breathing through mouths.
Of course you did.
And perhaps
thick
more
as shit,
acne
a bunch of
than
them.
As usual. I think maybe some vegetables might come in handy. Mm. But anyway, yeah, I was just watching them having a big scrap against Millwall
nice.
On the platform, and was
I
very impressed. I don't think anyone was the winner there, apart from me.
Football was the winner.
Getting out of Ipswich. but yeah, so these are new fans. They might even be kind of new to football itself. They're all full of piss and vinegar. They've had a lovely time walking around, as I saw on Saturday, walking around Norwich going, you know, that sort of thing. They are absolutely not prepared for what happens next, because they're like the shiniest of Arsenal fans, or, you know, they've now been conditioned to expect a lovely, easy ride. And it's going to be the biggest culture shock ever for thousands of brand new supporters.
Well, effectively,
that's going to have a psychological kind of weight
to still, it. I still think that if Arsenal didn't choke and give away Brentford, didn't fail so badly in that first game, Brentford's first game against Arsenal, because they'll put scum against someone big and shiny, probably be the Friday night game. Depends who else comes up, maybe through the playoffs. Like maybe if Leeds go up, they might put Leeds on. But if they, you know, if they lose 4-0 to
Liverpool, Ipswich, yeah. Liverpool,
yeah.
It will,
if Liverpool beat
Liverpool.
Like, it's all well and good with your momentum, but the issue with momentum punt, unless you get really lucky, like Brentford got so lucky at the start of their campaign, they played a series of teams who started really badly. So they were able to maintain some momentum and build some belief. Their games are much further apart. So therefore you stew on a bad result a lot more. So if you're not used to that as a fan base, if you're not used to that as a set of players, that can be or coaches, that can be really tricky. And if they are the Friday night or the Saturday lunchtime game or the Saturday evening game against Liverpool and they lose 4-0 at Anfield, of which there's absolutely no there's no shame in that happening to Everton, although obviously not recently, or West Ham or anyone else. Anyone can get taken apart at Liverpool, right? So they go to City and Haaland scores 4 goals against them, or Arsenal come to their place and don't actually choke and actually do a proper performance and smash them 3-0. All of a sudden, you've then got maybe 10 days until you get the opportunity to play again, other than like a League Cup game. So that momentum can disappear very, very quickly if they don't get lucky and get one of the teams they get given on an off day at the start of the season. So I don't think, I personally think Leicester are the only team who I would say, taking pragmatism and worry and self-protection out of it, I just think based on data and based on, you know, statistics and what's happened recently, and particularly the most recent year, Leicester to me are the only ones with the spending power to properly revamp their squad in a way that means that they're likely to do it. The advantage perhaps that you could say Filth have got is that because they were at the top for quite a long time and promotion has looked likely for quite a long time, maybe they can have had, maybe their focus has been on transfer window recruitment for the Premier League for a bit longer than a team who, you know, were in between 6th and 8th for a long period of time and then had a last burst up there kind of thing. But, you know, the idea that they are going to, they are still going to be in the same pot as we were, in that they are going to have to really hit lucky with a lot of their transfers, because that team is a bunch of people similar in a way to the Lambert era. There's a bunch of people playing above themselves, chip on their shoulder, come up a couple of performances. There's so many similarities. I haven't seen anything that suggests that he's as good a coach or any better a coach certainly than Lambert was. At the best at the moment, you could say is they're the same because they've done the same thing. And then Lambert got found out and then went to another couple of clubs and got found out there as well. We'll see. But I mean, to me, it's got nothing to do with Scum whether we go up. Like, I'm really pleased that they cannot beat us this year. That was, as I said on the previous pod, I love that the best season of their lives for most of these sort of young, shiny knobheads that you were referring to, Ed, the best season of their lives, the best they've been for a quarter of a century, and they still can't beat us. I love that. Like, I love that winning for us. I personally was having this conversation too yesterday. I was on a work trip and I was talking to a Spurs fan and a couple of other people who are Premier League fans. And they were surprised when I said, Chelsea fan was the other guy. And they were surprised when I said, yeah, I'd be really happy to lose with dignity over 2 legs to Leeds, because I don't want to lose at Wembley because of that moment element. You know, if we're going to make it to Wembley, obviously I'll be there with my lad as well. I don't want a crying 9-year-old and I don't want to be upset myself and disappointed.
A crying 39-year-old as well, I'd say, mate. Yeah,
I'll be 40 because it's on my 40th birthday.
And
yeah, so I'll be in my very, very, very late 30s that day. But yeah, I don't want to go to Wembley and lose because I've currently got 100% record at Wembley. Unfortunately, I haven't got 100% record in playoff finals, as you know. Obviously, I'm 1-for-2. So I almost think that is the, again, think about self-protectionism, maybe a 2-1 win, a 2-1 win and then a 3-1 loss over the 2 legs. I can both see that happening. And I also think that in the long run, that might be where we need to be. To your point, Edie, it just means that Napa goes, right, okay, got some old boys who are moving on. We need to hire some new guys. We're probably going to get some cash from a couple of people who are going to move on, but we'll cover that on the next pod. So it's a time to do a bit of a rebuild. It's a bit of a reset. Parachute payment's gone. It's into a new era. Napa would have well expected to be dealing with building a squad with no parachute payments. You're not going to take that job putting all of your hopes on this season, us going up, especially at the time he took over. It was, you know, we were in turmoil, right? So yeah, I'm totally comfortable. Should we do some more listening questions, Pump?
Yeah, we can do a couple more. Hang on, I've got to find them now. Two seconds.
Well, there's one that I saw that was predicting our first team 11 for next season, which I think is a really good question. Yes.
Yeah, so Phil, the roaming Anglian on Twitter, yeah, says, can the panel please give their guaranteed starting 11 for the first match of next season?
Is he going to come for us if it doesn't come to fruition?
Yeah, it's Phil. He always comes for us. He keeps receipts.
I want to see Sargent. I want to see him stay with us. I love him. He loves us. He's so on our wavelength. And we kind of did a little bit of an Alex Ferguson with him, didn't we? We got him like all settled down nice and early, all comfortable. He's definitely one of us. And yeah, I think that's definitely some of the more like attractive, successful goal scorers, obviously our South American buddies. Will they stay with us? It'd be lovely if they did, but it just feels like they're not quite as embedded, apart from, of course, Hernandez.
Yeah, I mean, are we going to say that, so I think you need to give two answers. If we go up, then I'm expecting at least six different faces in the starting lineup for next season.
And we keep all our good ones?
I think you do. I think you're able to.
Yeah, I agree.
Because of contract status, there's enough time on Sarah and Johnny's contracts that actually we can be pretty bullish on that. And also know that we've got January if need be. And then obviously the fire sale that happens when you get the inevitable relegation. But the other thing is, if we're in the Championship, I can see Gabby staying. I
really?
Yeah, I can. Because yeah,
nah. He signed to a Championship team. You know, it's not like they signed to a Premier League team and then got relegated and he's like, I don't know.
He is playing in one of Europe's big five leagues next season. Like absolute cast iron certainty.
I wouldn't hold it against him in the slightest.
He's given us an extra season. I think he could have gone.
But that's part of it. To your point, Edie, I think he's part. I love his vibe. I don't know. Who knows what? Who knows how settled he is in the area, etc. But I can see him staying with us, depending on sort of to your point, John, the right team coming in for him. I don't think that he is going to go just because it's the Bundesliga or just because it's the Premier League.
I think it'd be Premier League or La Liga. Yeah, I don't think that's where he'll end up.
I don't think he will want to go and sit on the bench. He's been an ever-present, right? Him and Kenny. Incredible achievement.
I don't think he sits on the bench for probably 17 teams in Spain. I don't think he sits on the bench for 12 Eight? Teams in the Premier League, maybe.
12, fair enough.
Yeah, he's that good. He's that good. Let's be honest. His output has been better than that James Maddison season.
Yeah.
All right. He's not quite.
How much do we get from him? So he goes to the bottom 12 of the Premier League. What do we get for him?
Yeah. And that is, I think, the only thing that could not necessarily save us, because actually there is a necessity to sell if we stay in the Championship. But it's the size of fee, because clubs aren't spending that much money anymore. You know, there's the fines that, not the fines, you know, the points deductions that Everton and the Nottingham Forest of the world have experienced has probably sent a bit of a shock. And I know they're going to potentially reconsider the financial fair play stuff for next season, but I just don't know if there'll be the clubs splashing the cash. And I wonder whether, whilst I think it should be upwards, you know, any fee for Gabriel Sarr, I should start with a 3. I think it'll probably be more in the realms of 20 to 25, because that will be the money that's on the table.
I can see him going for 20 to 25. I don't think there's anyone buying players who are unproven at that top level for that amount.
Yeah, but he's really good.
No, he is. I mean, he's incredible. And I feel similar to Emma. He's obviously had a really difficult season with injuries. I mean, imagine losing Emi Buendia for nearly the whole season and still having the best season you've had for decades. still being an amazing like European place team. Anyway, I feel like Emi, though, I don't think we've seen his ceiling, because he's obviously got so much better now. He's, you know, got into English football and got into the game. He's been roughed up. He's been kicked up in the air. He can mix it. He can be your set piece guy. He can, from both the setting up and also from a conversion point of view. He's good in the air. He's strong. He's physical. Good at tracking back. He can play in the 10. He can play in the 6. Yeah, you're right. He probably should have a 3 in front of it. And in years gone past, he would be. If we could get 22 or 20 rising to 25 with appearances, I think they have to take it. because you can build a championship squad with £20 million. Like, obviously not 22 players, but my point is that you can refresh. We can that is enough to refresh our squad with two or three marquee, doing finger in the air quote marks, marquee style championship signings of 6-7 million. You can buy two or three 6-7 million players there, which makes a huge difference.
Do you reckon that's going to be Ben Napper's style? That's the thing that we're yet to,
well, I hope not,
to really see, aren't we?
I hope not. And the point is, he will have to be that style if we go to the Premier League. So he will be forced into having to pay that kind of money, because you can't, we've seen it ourselves, you can't spend 500 grand and expect that player to do it for 15 to 20 games in the Premier League at a decent level. You know, free transfers are a complete lottery. You know, you tend to get one or two who are towards the end of their careers and coming over because they haven't played in the Premier League yet and they'd like to tick that off. So, you know, you might get lucky with that, but I don't know. There's so many factors that I think are out of control. I like the value for money I get out of being a championship season ticket holder. Like, I like how many games I get, the lack of VAR, the slightly more community feel that there just is at Championship League clubs. To your point, Edie, on the first start in 11 and staying in the Championship, if we do stay in the Championship, I can see Sargent staying, because you've got the likes of Armstrong, the guy's name I can't say from Blackburn. There are some shinier striking options who have scored.
He's
more.
He's a midfielder, I think, the Blackburn lad, isn't he? So he's still top scoring.
Yeah, they've been playing.
Sammy Smodic or whatever it is.
They've playing him as a false nine. That, so against Leicester, he was basically like left up front because like he scored those two breakaway goals. But yeah, the point is there are other players, Shea Adams, there's other sort of names that I think would probably be higher on people's list, and we might just about keep hold of him if, to your point about getting him settled and him being a lovely young boy, he might be happy enough that he's not going to push for it.
I think psychologically, if you look at the beginning of his career with us, that first season, I think it takes a lot for him to kind of just acclimatise, and then basically like what he does translates into like what the team around him are doing. I think he would know that. I think there would definitely be some nerves about going and playing for another team when actually this could be another championship season that could lead to a solid Premier League ascendance.
And also from a USA point of view, he needs games, right? Like, he is a starting striker potentially for the Americans. He can't risk being on the bench in the Premier League. You're not, because there will be other players who will be able to make a name for themselves. So he will get picked for, and he's proven that if he's scoring for Norwich, he will get picked for in the Championship. He will get picked for the USA team. That is obviously going to be a big factor next season going into the World Cup the following year. So
I think
the
more like dream players that stay with us into next season, if we don't get promoted, that's a sign that Napa will have made reassurances to them that point towards change. I don't think he's going to sit any of them down and say, look, we're going to carry on with David Wagner. We're going to carry on doing what we did before.
Yeah, that's the whole chat, isn't it?
They're not going to hang around for that.
Do you think do you think that he needs to get to Wembley? Do you think he's already done enough to still be the manager in August, whatever happens, you know, lose 3-0, 3-0, you know, over the this coming week? Do you think he's still... So I'll do one each. So coming to you first, Punt, he loses 3-0, 3-0, or 2-0, 3-0. Basically, it wasn't really competitive at any point and we don't make it to Wembley. Is he still the manager in August? Has he already done enough?
I think it depends what Ben Napper wants Norwich City to be. I thought it was really interesting that... And look, all right, this is going way off on tangent, but... Norwich have recently advertised for head coach for the women's team. There was no chat about any kind of investment in that team. It was very much an expectation that the coach would get that team up and would get them promoted with a core of homegrown players. And I think that's Ben Napper's first real move with the women set up. And I wonder whether there's an element of that being replicated within the men's as well. Because that, look, we know that's the aspiration. That's always been the aspiration for the football club, that the youth team would serve the first team and that would, you know, that would fund us as a football club. If Ben Napper has been brought in with that remit, there is absolutely zero chance that if we don't get promoted, that David Wagner is the head coach, because he's proven it already this season. He is so reticent to blood, you know, youth team products. And all right, you can look, you can go, oh, look, I've given Kennebo his debut or Finlay Welsh or whatever. But it was tokenism. Like, we're 3-4-0 up or losing 4-1, you know, when you chuck on these lads.
It was like when you get Johnny Depp on stage with your band to play guitar solo. Come on, Johnny.
But it was just, so look, he's not having these youth team players. You've got the likes of, kind of Hills, Abu Kamara, you know, who are maybe going to come back and need to be reintegrated into it.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and Hills, I think, is one of the ones that's been really underrated and has had a terrific season from everything that you hear. So if we're going to be that football club, David Wagner cannot be our head coach. If we're going to be a football club in the Premier League, and we had this conversation on the pod, I don't know, probably about 6 or 7 pods ago, about would Wagner's football potentially be a bit more short term, but possibly a bit more successful in the Premier League than Daniel Farke's? I don't know. Maybe it's an experiment that is worth persisting with, purely on the basis that even if we stayed up for like one season under Wagner, actually the financials involved in that just means that, you know, it's almost a no-brainer for the football club. So we're at a really, the point that you make, Edie, about the rebuild and Napa being able to quietly do that, I kind of really hope that is the outcome and that he is able to shape this into the football club that he wants it to be. Yeah.
We've got to go under the radar for a bit.
Yeah.
You know,
but I
who's
think
that?
Wagner's toast if we don't go up, I don't think.
Yeah. There's the mob boss, Vincent Giganti, who escaped the FBI for years while all of his peers were arrested and banged up for life. But just like, he just went under the radar. He just used to go to a restaurant in his pyjamas and they'd be like, that feeble old man, he's not a mob boss. Like, that's got to be our year. Of just like building up our crime empire while the people around us just see us acting feebly and dribbling spaghetti. And that's absolutely fine. Just quietly going about our business. And then it might be we can tap in to the Premier League after. Might be Ipswich tap out and then all of natural balance and order can be restored.
So what you're saying essentially is if in the director's box next season we see Ben Napper in his dressing gown with a big cigar on, that we might be on the right.
Just a big Sports Direct mug.
So
yawning.
So what do you reckon, Edie? You think Punter said if we lose, he thinks he's gone. Mm-hmm. If we knock out Leeds and they have their 6th playoff defeat in a row, and we're playing Saints. Probably. I really don't think West Brom are all that. Then
don't know if Southampton are all that, mate.
No, well. Anyway, point is, we lose to Southampton in this because we all agree if he takes us up, there's no conversation. Of course, he's going to be the manager. However, we're not Watford. However, if we fail on Wembley Way, does he keep his job?
I think there's going to be a very if they do get rid of him, and it's very likely, I don't think there is any appetite for a kind of Mardy flounce type sacking, which I think we did very badly and have suffered from. I think hopefully grown-ups and sort of level heads will prevail, and it might not necessarily be related to that particular moment that a sacking occurs. It's probably like everything gets tied up one way or another, and then over time, a very quiet announcement that somebody's heading off.
I think it's interesting listening to you both. I think he is already assured to be in the dugout in August. I don't think there's any chance that they, with the parachute payments going, I don't think they sign up for another 8 months of paying his wages and paying another manager at the same time.
But do you think, like, his public comments, like where the squad not being deep enough, like was almost like open signs of defiance towards the sporting director, like, which, you know, those comments have been made by him and are on record.
Yeah.
I just don't see how that ends particularly well. And, you know, like rumours that you hear are, you know, that we spoke to coaches, you know, kind of around December, January time, there's Will Still, I think, has been put out there as one that we might have been looking at.
Oh, the Arsenal lad. Quest,
No, the Quester stuff as well. You know, the Arsenal lad. You know, like, there's, it's unless it was massively agent talk. We were talking to coaches, you know, kind of around the turn of the year. I just don't see a world where if we don't get promoted, where he's still here.
I don't know. Just,
really
I think we've moved on since then. Sudden, meaning.
But who else is out there? Who's better?
Well, I think
that's a key factor. You know, you have to make do with what you.
The quester element, I think, is a potential, because I think that's where you would think with Napa he would feel he's got enough of a known quantity there that he feels comfortable doing it. But since those reports came out and since those conversations took place, Norwich have been on a really, really good run of mostly performances, but definitely results. And I don't know, I personally can't see it. I hear the logic, but Norwich doesn't feel like the sort of club that almost wants to have a reputation as getting in the playoffs when you were miles off it at the turn of the year isn't good enough. Do you see what I mean?
But the massive, I do. I absolutely see that. And the fact that we've stuck with him this season and that we've made the playoffs is to be admired. Like, you know, I thought it was lunacy at the time, but it is to be admired. Like, now we are where we are. But Norwich need to cultivate a reputation of being a team that will, you know, if you go there as a 17, 18 year old, if you're hand plucked from, you know, an academy that, you know, maybe Luton, for example, like Max and Jamal were, that there will be a pathway into the first team, that there will be a pathway for your progression, that you will, you know, you will move on to a better club, you know, when the time's right. And so if Norwich want to market themselves as that team, you know, that stepping stone, and, you know, the finances that come around that for Norwich are significant based on the, you know, the Aarons, Lewis, Godfrey, you know, kind of sales that we've made before. If we want to be that football club, we cannot be that football club with David Wagner at the helm. So, you know, it's a real pick and moment.
Unless that's the ultimatum.
Choose who you want to be.
It might be that's the ultimatum in the summer. Like, there might be the conversation.
It almost
if they
felt
don't
like
up.
It was the ultimatum, but he had to come in and play youngsters. Like, stuff that we hear is he doesn't really rate any of the youngsters. And actually, there's no evidence to back up the fact that he rates any of the current crop. You know, so unless he thinks Abu Kamara is brilliant, Brad Hills is brilliant, Jonathan Tomkinson might come back and do something, you know, Jaden Warner.
Well, I thought he looked really good when he had a few cameos before Tomkinson.
But unless he thinks that and he's like, right, here are four or five lads that I can integrate quickly, then I just don't see how it's viable. And given the fact that we will be selling probably two of Rowe, Sarah, Gunn, Sargent,
I really want Gunn to stay. It's so nice having a settled goalie who you just think
let's be frank,
fantastic, one of the best keepers in the league. You know, that,
but it is two of those four, isn't it?
Not if we go up. So, but I don't think we'll go up. I think so. Speaking of which, I think we need to round off with guarantees here. Because it's a playoff period, I need two. So I want a guaranteed scoreline ED on Sunday, and then a guaranteed scoreline for the return leg on Thursday at Elland Road.
Got this sort of draw feeling.
Mm-hmm. We're going pens, are we?
Yeah, just it's gonna go like it's gonna be a grind, and then obviously drama. But it's like this is all about us versus Leeds, and it's just we've never quite kind of because there's all sorts of like hidden sort of subsurface emotions at play. We've lost John.
Yeah, John's dropped off. He's obviously so worried about his guarantee that he daren't give it to the audience. I think we will nick it in the first leg, but they will nick it better in the second leg. I don't like under lights Thursday night at Elland Road. I think we were a bit cowed by that occasion because we played in midweek. So similar occasion when we played him away during the season. I think we nick it at home and we have a good day, which would be nice. You know, John talked about moments earlier. We have a nice moment where we go into the end of the first leg, 2-1 up maybe. But I think they're too strong for us at the end in Elland Road. We know Farker's teams play to the final whistle. Wagner's teams tend to drop off a bit towards the final whistle. I'll be really interested to see how he sets out. If we try and attack him and really go for it and play like a proper home team, that's what I want to see. What I don't want is for us to play them the way we tried to play them twice already this season, which is sort of just sit back and say, you've got to break us down. We cut for 180 minutes. You can't play like that. You've got to try and go and get your goals in your home leg and then have a lead to defend. And I think we can do it in the home leg, but I think they'll have too much.
The home leg, we will score at like the third or fourth minute.
Yes, I can. Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah. I can see it being quite a tight game at home, which we nick by one goal, maybe 2-1.
But equaliser at like 73, 74 minutes for Leeds, then Pens.
Well, up in Leeds, is that what you're saying? Their fans are worried about the fact that that playoffs is bogey time for them. Like, they have suffered in the playoffs. So, and whereas our lot have got a fairly clean slate, like it's fresh to all of our lot. Like, we don't really have that hanging over us. Like,
we've not done it much.
No, we did it, we won and done, and it was fine. But look, we'll see what the weekend brings. I am very, very hopeful that we have some brilliant moments on Sunday, and that it is an enjoyable send off at Carrow Road, because the last league game of the season was such a damp squib, really. So let's hope that it is a really, really raucous, fantastic atmosphere, and whatever happens, we'll review it on the next pod. Do mind how you go.